This is Business Impact, a podcast series from UCD College of Business, Ireland's leading business school. You may notice that we don't have our normal host, Emmett Oliver, today, and that's because her sport has taken over the UCD Business Impact podcast to mark International Women's Day 2024. My name is Niamh Tallon. I'm a graduate of Quinn School of Business and UCD Smurfit with a BCom and Masters in Digital Marketing. I'm also the founder of Her Sport, a media platform whose mission is to use sport to empower, educate and inspire so that girls and women can achieve their full potential. Today we are celebrating the UCD Quinn School female sporting community and are delighted to welcome four incredible women from Olympians to professional athletes and leaders in sport. I'm joined by Alice O'Callaghan, Development and Events Manager at the Six Nations, footballer Chloe Mustaki, sailor Eve McMahon, and hockey player Hannah McLaughlin. Let's jump into the conversation. So just to get started, what I would like to do is get everybody to introduce themselves. We'll do a short introduction just so that any of the listeners that maybe aren't aware of who you are, what your backgrounds are, can familiarise themselves with you. So we'll go with your name, your degree, and then your relationship with sport, including your current position. So Hannah, we might start with you.
Hi everyone, my name is Hannah McLaughlin and I graduated from Economics and Finance last year. And I am an international hockey player. So I've kind of been playing the last 10 years. I picked a stick up going into secondary school, realized it was for me, and then worked my way up through the Leinster and Irish underage teams. Got my first cap in 2017 for the senior team. And very fortunate to have gone to the Tokyo 2021 Olympic Games. And along with that, I've been to one World Cup and two Europeans with the senior team.
Amazing. Thank you. Eve, we'll start with you next.
Hi, everyone. My name's Eve McMahon. I'm currently in second year studying Commerce International, and I'm a high-performance sailor. I sail the single-handed Olympic female dinghy, and I've successfully qualified for Paris.
And then, Chloe, we'd love to hear a little bit more about yourself in terms of your degree and obviously what your involvement with sport is.
Hi, everyone. My name is Chloe Mustaki. I'm a current Bristol City women's football player and also Irish international. I graduated from Commerce International in 2018 and then went on to the SEMS program in Smurfit Business School the following year. So I graduated from that in 2019. Yeah, attended the World Cup with the women's team last summer over in Australia. So that was an amazing experience and hopefully a Euros to come in 2025.
My name is Alice O'Callaghan. I studied Bachelor of Commerce at UCD and graduated in 2014. I've always kind of been involved in sport, and currently I'm the Development and Competitions Manager at Six Nations, which encompasses looking after our under-18s festivals, summer series and under-20s. So those include the women's side of those competitions too. And then just in terms of my own kind of personal life, I've always been heavily involved in rugby as a player, coach, and also on the committee side of things. I've previously coached UCD Women's and Wanderers Women's, and I'm currently on the management committee of UCD RFC.
Keeping yourself plenty busy anyway.
Yeah.
So in today's episode of the podcast, we are celebrating International Women's Day, and we'll explore the crossover between business and sport. So what I wanted to start off with was a statistic. 94% of women in executive managerial positions have a background in sport. So Chloe, going to you, what are the first thoughts when you hear that statistic?
Yeah, I don't actually find it that surprising. I mean, as many people know, like some of the similarities between achieving a high level in sport go hand in hand with achieving, you know, high levels in other areas of your life. So it doesn't surprise me at all, but it's a fantastic statistic to hear. And hopefully that will encourage younger females to get into sport so that it helps them in their general career outside of sport as well at the same time.
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's a lot of commonalities between sport and between business. Hannah, coming to you, did you find that statistic surprising, or you agree it's something that is probably expected?
I would say, similar to Chloe, I don't personally find it very surprising. Obviously, having a strong background in sport, but I wouldn't be surprised, you know, in the kind of general population that might not have as strong an affinity with sport, I'd say it would be surprising. But I know I've started a graduate program in Davy Stockbrokers in September. So it's kind of my first, well, I did an internship here as well, but it's my first kind of look into the life of that side of things in a corporate setting. And it's amazed me probably the lack of awareness I have myself of the quality of skills that that sport has given me in terms of even just things like communication skills, teamwork, resilience, those types of things that I'd say we all probably take for granted. Coming into a work environment has definitely surprised me that they're not skills that are as common as I would have thought.
Yeah, interestingly, actually, I've been speaking to people about this over the last few weeks, and somebody that we know that's in a managerial position in the workplace says that they could actually pick out around the room the people that have been involved in sport and the people that have not. So it is, as you mentioned, like all of these skills that you're picking up along the way, maybe without even realizing it, and something that will stand to you over time. Eve, I wanted to come to you. So 1 in 2 girls drop out of sport by the age of 20, which means those girls that are dropping out of sport are actually on the back foot when it comes to developing their personal and, professional development. What do you think about that statistic?
Yeah, obviously, there's a huge issue of being such a high dropout rate of females in sport, especially young females. And I think we just kind of have to work on the pathway for the younger females. It's kind of the likes of my age who are dropping out. And I suppose it's just working on the support team around the females. I think it's just very important to understand and support the younger girls coming up.
And I think we probably have had a number of men that have been involved in sport, whether it be athletes or in different managerial positions, go in and speak to corporates and share their stories and share their commonalities. And I think, in terms of what we've been doing on that side, I think that it's been maybe a little slow for the penny to drop and for us really to be investing, as you said, at that younger age group, so that we are supporting, girls in their personal and professional development. The next question that we wanted to go to you with, Alice, is what is the biggest thing that sport has offered you?
I think sport has offered me a number of different, skills to develop for my career. So obviously teamwork is huge. I've been involved always in team sports, in particular, most recently in rugby. And it's given me that experience of learning to work and be a member of a team of people who are very different to you. Obviously some are the same, but some are different, and learning how to be, the best teammate you can be to them, but also how they can help you as well. And that's something that's been hugely important in my career, as well as developing things such as communication skills, leadership skills. So there's a huge amount that I've taken from sport that I've brought into my experience in work.
Absolutely. And I think some of the skills that you're talking about there, they're benefiting you in both your personal and professional life. Touching on leadership, teamwork, communication, resilience, obviously, hugely important. And then also competitiveness as well, which I'd love to dive into a little bit later. Hannah, you've mentioned that you've just started with Davy. So talk to us a little bit about what you have learned on the pitch about teamwork and communication. And maybe you can give us a bit of an insight into what it's like now in the professional capacity.
Yeah, I can give it a good go, I suppose. I did an internship here when I was in third year of economics and finance in the middle of COVID. So it was all online. So it's funny that I had worked here for a year, but had never really understood what the normal operations of the company were. So as I said, I've joined in September on the capital markets division of Davy on the institutional side. And it's funny. So I'm still, I suppose the best way to describe it is living a bit of a dual career, that I'm still playing a hockey player Mondays, Tuesdays, and then pursuing my professional career Wednesday, Thursday, Fridays, which is brilliant. And I feel very fortunate to be able to do both. In terms of communication in sport and in work, I would definitely say that there is a lot more awareness on the effectiveness of it in sport. You're in high pressure moments where you need to get a message across to someone right now. And because of the immediacy and importance of that, we'd spend a lot of time as a hockey squad and as a team and as friends understanding, one, how we all like to be communicated with, what we find most effective, and also, what type of communication is going to reflect the values that we have as individuals and as a team. And I suppose in work, there are similarities around the importance of it, but the timeline on which it can occur can be a lot slower, and there might be a little bit less, I suppose, not care, but a little bit less interest around, what type of people that are on your team. How can I adapt my communication style just a little bit to get the best out of my team? But I would say you know, the environment that I work in here is extremely manic at times. It's very, very fast paced. So it can definitely be a challenge for people to have the time to learn that about each other, especially when there's new people coming in and people leaving. So I definitely think there's a lot of things to be learned from sport that can be, you know, applied to a corporate world. But I definitely think being on a sports team as opposed to individual, you need to be on the same page if you're going to get anywhere. Whereas in the corporate world, you can still, you know, progress very much on an individual basis and not rely on your team as much.
I think it's really interesting because that's actually something that we're exploring at HerSport at the moment and, you know, trying to ensure that we have the best communication possible and we are, you know, discussing with people what are their preferred communication styles and everything. So really interesting that you've talked about that, you know, from the hockey perspective and maybe to bring up as you progress in your career in Davy to see like what are the different things that you can do, because, you know, in terms of high performance and the performance of the team or the performance of the business, the best that you're going to get out of it is when everybody is communicating with each other in the most effective way possible. And look, whether it's on the pitch or whether it's in a business, like people are working towards common goals, so you're going to get the best results when everybody is on that same page. Alison, in terms of the workplace and in terms of your role with Six Nations, how clear is it that the skills that we're talking about here with teamwork and communication and other skills that you learn in sport are transferable skills to the workplace?
I think it's really important in my current role. I mean, we're obviously working with 60 unions and personnel across all different departments there every day. And they're all very different culturally, all six of them. And I know sometimes people might not think that, but they really are. And it's about understanding those nuances. And I think that's kind of what you take from sport in terms of is that relationship building, how you can quickly build relationships sometimes ahead of competitions. And how you can get the best out of the people you're working with and how they can get the best out of you to make sure that you're providing kind of, I guess, our aim is to put on the best kind of competitions that we can. And so it's really important that we build on those relationships, recognize that they're all different and take that into consideration when we're making decisions, when we're communicating with them and when we go about kind of putting on our competitions and matches.
And I suppose in the competition that you're obviously talking about, there are a couple of different languages in that as well. So communication is absolutely important, making sure that there's nothing lost in translation.
Hugely. Yeah, I think it's probably one of the most important things. And I definitely wish I had better language skills so I could communicate a bit more easily with our colleagues in France and Italy in particular. But in fairness, there's a great kind of I guess English is the main language, but we're always there with interpreters and that to ensure that everyone's on the same page. And it is really important that we are on the same page because we don't want kind of that miscommunication or that people going in different directions when we've maybe thought we've agreed on one way and then we start spearing heading into others.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned the difference in culture as well, because I think, you know, when people are, you know, maybe doing business in Ireland, you know, we have commonalities and I suppose people are coming from maybe similar backgrounds or culture is similar. But when you are looking at, you know, doing business in different territories and we might think sometimes that the UK is quite close, but there obviously are differences as well. So keeping that in mind, and I suppose you can you know, learned that a lot through sport as well with travel and that I'm sure everybody on the call is familiar with. Eve, in terms of sailing, you can obviously compete individually and you can compete as a team. In terms of being successful as an individual, what are some of the skills that that you need to be successful as an individual athlete?
Yeah, so I'm obviously in a bit of a unique position to the rest of the girls here that I do compete by myself and it's just me, myself and I on the race course. But I've had to learn the skill of communication with the support team around me. When I was a younger sailor, I suppose I was very independent that I didn't think that I needed anybody else helping me or to share any issue. But I've come to learn, you know, a problem shared is a problem halved. And, you know, I suppose my team, my support team around me, we go through the highs and the lows together. And I think the skill of learning from that together and applying it, it's very similar to the business world. You go through the highs and the lows of getting a deal or not being able to sign a contract. And you learn from what went wrong and being able to apply it into the next, you know, element of business or sport. So yeah, it's been it's been a very interesting, and you know, I've loved the experience of being an individual sailor, but having a support team behind me that I've had to work with.
And then in terms of maybe some other skills that you might speak to us a little bit about, or some other attributes you think as an individual athlete that stand to you when you're competing, like obviously, you know, we're talking here about, you know, qualification for Paris and you're competing at the top level. So there's obviously a number of attributes that you have that have gotten you there. Maybe what are two or three of them that might stand out to you? And don't be too modest.
It's been a dream since I was very young to compete at Olympic Games. So I suppose you could say dedication. There's been a lot of hard work that's been put in behind the scenes that I suppose not a lot of people see, and organization as well. You know, I've had to learn, you know, how to work the best that I can do and, you know, be the best performance, high performance athlete that I can be. And yeah, it, like I said, it just transfers back into the business world as well, you know, being that leader and being able to stand up and be organized and dedicated throughout.
Absolutely. Chloe, sometimes we find that competitiveness in women is not always celebrated. What are your thoughts on that? And do you think that as society, we should maybe be more supportive of competitive women?
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion. I think overall, generally, like getting that buy-in from males going forward will be the most important thing in this discussion, allowing females to have a voice in the workplace. Obviously in sport, we're seeing the dial changing a little bit and there's a lot more talk when women's sport and how far that can grow. But I think there's still a long way to go, not only in sport, but mostly in the business sector. Yeah, it'll be an interesting discussion going forward. But I just think for me, my perspective would be that if we can keep trying to raise awareness and getting that buy-in from our male counterparts, it'll probably make it a more attractive prospect for females wanting to go for managerial positions. Obviously, that's only one aspect. Then you talk about flexibility, work flexibility, so that females can tap into other areas of their life, such as being a mother, etc. But yeah, for me, having worked obviously for a couple of years as well before turning professional, just having that support from male counterparts, I think is a massive part of the discussion.
And do you think that, you know, competitiveness should be something that we are aspiring to be and that young girls are aspiring to be and maybe not be shy about?
Yeah, I do think so. I think if you have a certain level of competitiveness in you, you'll probably bounce back from failures a little bit better. You'll want to get back on the horse and try and reach those goals. And yeah, I suppose it'll keep you striving for the next best thing. And, you know, in sport, when we achieve one goal, it's about looking at the next goal. So for sure, like in the working environment as well, having that level of competitiveness and then always wanting to strive for the next best thing is definitely important in terms of overall success.
And Hannah, in terms of women in the workplace, what do you think of the attributes like competitiveness and determination?
It's funny, there was actually a panel on this morning that I got to take part in with similar themes around International Women's Day, and kind of a topical thing that came up was, you know, the role that men have in that change. We were talking a little bit about, you know, a job might get posted with five key skills, and typically, now this is very typical, if a male has one or two of them, he'll apply and assumes that he should get it. And if a female is looking, unless she has at least four out of those five skills, she probably won't apply out of not believing that she should be there. And there was an executive member that spoke that has recently been promoted to a position. And she said when, you know, one of her friends was encouraging her to apply, she said, oh, well, you know, I can't do that. I have to be at the creche at 5 p.m. to collect my kids. I don't have, you know, an au pair or a nanny to do that. So I don't see how I could do that job. And she is absolutely flying at that job now. She leaves work to make sure she gets to the creche, and she signs in back at home if needs be. So I think there's a huge amount to be said for, you know, putting your name in the hat for something and really, you know, backing yourself before anyone else will. But I know from, you know, first and second hand in the business world, you do need, you know, a sponsor or a mentor or an advocate sometimes to give you that flexibility and to meet you halfway. But I definitely think that, you know, if you don't back yourself in a situation, it's very hard for other people to back you. And unless, you know, you're reaching that kind of point of failure, you're probably not putting yourself in as many ambitious positions that you could be in. And that was something that I definitely shared with the group and have learned from sport. You know, I watched the women's hockey team qualify in Donnybrook, and I was very much a spectator. I'd bought my ticket and I had gone and watched. I had received a first cap at the time, but when they had qualified, was not involved with the training squad at all. And 18 months later, found myself on the hockey pitch in Tokyo in the starting 10. So I think I'm very lucky that I've learned firsthand, you know, when you know you're really, really confident in yourself, the worst that can happen is you get told no. And once you're able to take that, you've no idea where you may or may not end up. And I definitely think that's not felt among females in general. And that's one thing around International Women's Day. It's not just around a celebration of achievements. It's about, you know, visibility. I know you guys in her sport were huge in the 20 by 20 campaign, Can't See, Can't Be. And it's still so evident, you know, in work, that until you can see females up in a C-suite level with a marriage and kids and an outside hobby and finding some time in the week, you probably won't believe it's possible. But I'm very lucky that here in Davie, I can see that. And it really does, you know, shed a bit of light on the opportunity and path that is possibly ahead of any young female or male graduate, if you want it.
Yeah, I think there's some interesting points that have come up, and there was some of the points that you guys have made I had for further in the conversation. But I think the interesting things there is the themes coming through of, you know, men supporting, whether it's in sport or whether it is in the workplace. And I think, you know, in terms of, you know, sometimes decision makers at the moment, you know, particularly in certain industries, there are still more men sitting at the table. So it is important that for any of the listeners to, you know, give women the opportunities to maybe give sometimes people that nudge, being aware of that statistic that you have mentioned, where, you know, sometimes women might be looking for all of the criteria to put their hand up, whether it be for a promotion or something like that. And as you said, the worst thing that can happen, you know, sometimes is that, you know, the answer is no. And, you know, whether that's to get on a team, or whether that's to, you know, in sport, or whether that's to, you know, get a promotion in the workplace, I think you may as well go for it. You've nothing to lose and only something to gain. And I think you'll always learn something from the process, which is something that is always invaluable. And then I think, Chloe, what you were saying there is about sometimes there are accommodations that need to be made. Hannah, I think what you have mentioned and described in your circumstance at the moment is actually that your workplace is supporting you in terms of being a professional athlete, but also giving you the opportunity to develop, you know, your career outside of your athletic career, I suppose. But also if that accommodation can be made for you as an athlete, that also should be supported, you know, in workplaces, you know, for women that might be expanding their family. And I think what you've talked about there in terms of a woman that is, you know, married, has a family, you know, there are dads in positions too. The onus isn't necessarily on a woman to take on, you know, raising families, and that there are dads that maybe can go home and maybe support their families in terms of women taking those opportunities, whether it be in business or in sport.
Definitely. It came up as well. There's an interesting study done in the Nordic regions around how they're kind of progressing with, you know, both maternity and paternity leave. And I don't know the exact statistics, but they're definitely a lot further ahead than we are around, you know, new fathers taking a few months out of their career and balancing a little bit more between maternity and paternity. But it's one of those things that we're not quite there yet. But I just know from personal experience, obviously, I haven't experienced a motherhood. I'm very much still a kid myself, but it's one of those things, if you don't ask, you don't get. And I knew when I was graduating from college, I said, I still want to play sport. That's my priority, but I want to pursue my professional career. I need to go find a company that's going to, God, support me to maybe work 3 days a week. But I knew that, you know, it was possible because I knew I could add value 3 days a week. And it's similar with, you know, females wanting to either have a first child or extend their families, that once you feel confident in your ability and once you're at the table, you know, you don't ask, you don't get. And the more confidence that you can have in what you need and what you want out of work, that picture can become a lot clearer around how much time you want to take off and also what you need from a company to come back to work. But yeah, it seems that the Nordics are kind of championing that at the moment.
in terms of even sharing your story there, and for somebody to hear that you're able to do both, I think that also demonstrates that if somebody is having a family, you know, male or female, you can, you know, rework your setup, you know, to do what you want to do. I was actually listening to a podcast earlier on, and they were talking about Iceland and their setup, and it was actually into maternity and paternity leave, and how leave can be transferable over there as well, which I think takes the onus sometimes off women in relationships, you know, or the, you know, the woman that's bearing the child in to not necessarily be the person that has to stay at home, that, you know, another partner can get that leave as well and have their opportunity to you know, be at home with their family. Chloe, I wanted to come to you. You've just demonstrated determination throughout your career. You've experienced injury and illness, but I feel like you always seem clear on your goals and determined to achieve them. You played underage football for Ireland, captaining a pretty successful team. And then when you were 26, after a lot of hard work, you got your first cap for the senior team. So talk to us a little bit about how you stay determined and motivated to achieve that, because I'm sure, you know, playing as a teenager and then striving always to try and get that first senior cap, I'm sure it felt like a long journey at the time.
Yeah, it's been a long road for me in terms of, as I said, reaching that first senior cap, given the fact I'd started playing football at the age of six. So similar to a lot of the girls, I started playing in the underage ranks with the Irish team at the age of 12, but didn't make my first senior cap for whatever it was. Yeah, as you mentioned, 14 years later. So my mum always said to me growing up, and still says it to this day, like, the biggest thing she thinks I've learned from sport is discipline. And I think that's really stood to me in terms of keeping on track. So when times have gone not my way, I suppose, through illness or through injury, just being able to stay disciplined and being able to continue being consistent in terms of all the little habits that I had. But I think the girls can probably vouch for this as well. Once you get a taste of high level sport at a young age, it's hard to give that up no matter what comes your way. And I think that was a saving grace for me, being able to kind of captain an Irish team at the age of 14 at under 15's level. It just gave me that taste of success. And that has carried me through really difficult times, not only in sport, but also in business when I worked for a few years before turning professional. So yeah, I think I was very lucky, as I said, to have had a taste of that high level sport early on. But for me, just having that discipline and doing the little things consistently has allowed me to kind of stay on track and to bounce back from, be it failures or be it tough times in my life.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose, how did you stay determined and motivated? It was that taste of that top level that just kept you driven.
Yeah, probably. I don't shy away from the fact that I had a lot of support around me throughout all those difficult times. And I'm incredibly lucky for that. And I know other people who maybe face challenges don't have the support around them to get them back on their two feet and get them up and running like I did all of those times. So it's not just all thanks to me, but I do have, you know, a lot to thank myself for in terms of that resilience that I've shown, I suppose, but just grown from the difficult times that I've lived through has also propelled me forward in other ways. So it's been tough, but I really have a lot to thank sport for, especially when it came to my illness, that ability to live through that experience, but know that I could still achieve a lot of great things.
Well, we were certainly happy at her sport to see you get the first senior cap 2 years ago. In terms of where you are now, you're currently a full-time professional athlete, and you mentioned there earlier that you've also been you also have been working while also you know, pursuing football as well. Tell us a little bit, I suppose, about your career, you know, the world outside of sport, and maybe your ambitions after your athletic career as well.
Yeah, so unlike a lot of other professional female footballers, I only joined the professional world 18 months ago. So I'm now 28 years of age, so it's quite late. 10 years ago, when I was finishing up school, the idea of going professional was a far-fetched idea, especially in my sport. So it didn't really seem like I had much of a choice. I obviously attended UCD, studied international commerce, did a master's after that, and decided to get a few years of work experience before I even contemplated the idea of turning pro. So I did an internship over in London and decided to stay on there. And I started working in executive search with Maven Search over in London. At the same time, I was balancing football too. So dual careering, like a lot of the girls on this call here today. So But to be honest, they probably went hand in hand, in the sense that because I was thriving in my sport, it allowed me to kind of thrive in another area of my life, which I'm sure the others can vouch for too. So yeah, I mean, I enjoyed those years of my life, but at the same time, it didn't allow me to give 100% in either area. So while it taught me a lot of skills, being able to balance the two, I knew that at some point, if I wanted to really reach my goals in sport, that I needed to kind of park the professional side for a few years. So yeah, about 18 months ago, I decided to do that. And I'm now playing professionally. So it's been a nice reward for all of the years where you graft and you try and balance everything from when the alarm goes off at 7 a.m. to when your head hits the pillow at 10, whatever it may be. So right now, the idea is just to enjoy being a professional athlete for as many years as it'll give me, or that I want to continue playing for. And then after that, I absolutely am determined to get back into business. In what capacity, I'm not too sure yet, but I definitely see myself working in some sort of kind of managerial position where I can kind of draw on everything I learned through my business studies, but also my communication skills, working in a team for all of these years, and my general experience in sport. So yeah, I'm excited for when I feel ready for that. But right now, I'm just enjoying the ride of being a professional footballer, and for all the sacrifices that I've made along the way, it's nice to kind of put the feet up after at 3 p.m. when everyone else is still working for a few hours longer.
It's great to hear, I suppose, the experience that you did gain as well. Like, that's something that I suppose you can you know, be happy that you have in the back pocket as well. Like, obviously your sporting career, but the fact that you actually have been out in the business world as well, I'm sure will give you comfort in the future. Alice, you're working in the sports industry, I suppose, in a different context. We've a lot of athletes on the call here, but you're coming at it from a different angle. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you are doing with the Six Nations? I'm sure it's very busy at the moment, currently in competition, and the Women's Six Nations just around the corner as well.
It's very busy at the moment. So I'm, I guess, more planning and focusing on our under 18s festivals. So we have our men's and our women's festivals, which kick off the end of this month. So our men's is in Parma in Italy, and our women's is in Colwyn Bay in Wales. So they're really exciting times for both those unions to host them, and obviously for all our squads who be involved. And it's great to see the developments, and particularly the women's side for those festivals. It's our third year doing them. We stream every game for everyone to see, and there's always good crowds coming down, and lots of parents and families and friends supporting all those players. So that's kind of the main focus at the moment, trying to get everything over the line ahead of that. And then looking ahead to, obviously, we've got a program in the summer as well for women's teams, development sides. And then, yeah, obviously a bit of work to do with the Women's Six Nations that kicks off in 3 weeks' time. So it's really busy. It's very exciting. I guess I mainly focus on the operation side. So mainly around, I guess, for the festivals, it's all the planning and thing, ensuring that we've all the teams are there, they're comfortable, they've got training, accommodation facilities, access to those, that our match days run smoothly, that we're comfortable with all the laws and regulations in place. And that we can also give them a fantastic playing and development opportunity. You know, this is part of their pathway to hopefully one day becoming, you know, a fully fledged international, and to actually play in a Women's Six Nations. And we're already seeing, you know, from 3 years ago, a couple of those players nearly making that step up for this upcoming Six Nations, or the one coming up next year. So it's great to be a part and to see how that pathway is developing and how it's being hugely influential for those for our unions.
And I know in rugby, maybe similar to football, and you know, the two sports are really on a journey at the moment. With the Women's Six Nations this year, I suppose, what can we expect? I know there's a lot of rumblings of excitement, and just trying to keep building the tournament year on year.
Yeah, I think obviously we've got a new title sponsor in Guinness, which is really exciting. And I know they're incredibly excited to kick off the championship, to continue to grow on what has been a huge success over the last few years, from sold out stadiums to just huge results in terms of viewership, reach on our social content across our unions and our own channels. So I can definitely expect more of that this year, obviously. In Ireland, we're excited for them to have it in three different venues across the country.
Yeah.
Which gives the whole of the island an opportunity to see those girls play at the highest level, and similarly in France. And then obviously some great opportunities with England playing in Twickenham again against Ireland. And then we've also got Wales who will be in the Principality. So it's hugely exciting. It's great to see how ambitious the unions are to grow the game as well. And to put on these matches in big stadiums and to get the biggest crowds they can to support their teams.
Yeah, I think it's great to see that for the home games that Ireland will be, you know, playing in those different stadiums across the country. And as you said, you know, trying to grow the game across the nation and you know, drive as many fans as possible. And then, yeah, definitely an exciting prospect, you know, to play over in England. And, you know, I know everyone is expecting a sold out crowd or a new record. So, yeah, something really exciting for everyone to be part of and for the Irish team to go out there and play in front of so many people as well. The commercial world of sport can be quite male dominated, as well as the rugby industry. So could you share a little bit about what your experience has been in that respect?
I guess actually I'm very fortunate at Six Nations. We're probably about 50-50, if actually not more, women in our organisation of about 35 people or so. And even at a senior exec level, it's 50-50. So in terms of being in a diverse workforce, it's probably the first time I've worked somewhere where it has been that even. In terms of kind of females and males. And it's exciting to have that, I guess, seeing the prospect of people in senior leadership roles here. And then, so it does have an impact. It's not to say that at times, yes, when you're kind of working at matches and that, it can be quite male dominated with the people you work with. I'm definitely seeing more and more that that's changing and that it's becoming more and more diverse workforce. And it's kind of there are lots of opportunities encouraging females to get more involved with, you know, obviously a lot of the leagues are doing big leadership programs for women. You know, obviously World Rugby and URC and that, which definitely helps, I think, give women the confidence to get involved and work in sport across various different areas, be it broadcast, commercial or marketing or operations. So yeah, I think there's definitely a lot more opportunities and growth and areas where you can gain mentorship than there was probably 5, 6, 7 years ago when I actually joined the kind of, I guess, the sporting industry.
And I suppose something just to mention maybe for the group on the call as well as the listeners as well, you know, you mentioned there that Guinness has come on board sponsoring both the men's and the women's tournament. And, you know, a big change this year was in terms of the language. So it's the Guinness Men's Six Nations and the Guinness Women's Six Nations, where previously it's kind of been the Six Nations and then the Women's Six Nations. So talk to us a little bit, I suppose, about the importance of that.
Yeah, I think it's really important. Obviously, I guess it's something that when internally, when I started here, that was how we did refer to them, just for the simple thing of knowing what we were working on. But it's great to see that also now in the wider world that it is for both, and that we're very clear on that it's a men's and but we have our women's competition, and we want that kind of even parity, that both competitions are just as important to us. We, you know, we want our women's to become the biggest and the best competition. You know, we call these are the greatest rugby championships in the world, and we definitely believe that year on year. And the women's one, we wanted to get it to the level that the men's competition currently holds. And we're definitely working towards that. And the success of the last 3 years has kind of seen that evidence, and seeing how engaging our fan base has been with the competition and with the teams has been great.
And I think in terms of that use of language, like, that can have a huge ripple effect. And I think for a tournament like that to do that is really significant, and hopefully we'll see others follow suit. I did get an email into Her Sport there about 2 weeks ago, and we got loads of statistics and, you know, top 20 greatest sporting moments in Ireland over, I think it was maybe a century. And it was frustrating to see how it was the Irish team, and it was unfair to, you know, Ireland, you know, playing whatever other team or an achievement, Ireland getting to the Euros, et cetera, was unfair that it was the men's team. And then any time that they were recognising, you know, women's teams or female athletes, it was, you know, the Irish women's rugby team or, you know, the Irish women's hockey team, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that movement that the Six Nations have done is significant. And I have an email in drafts going back to that organisation asking them, can they please, you know, just bear in mind, you know, their use of language they had got a quiz attached to the email, and in the quiz it asked when was the first time that, you know, Ireland rugby beat New Zealand. And they had the incorrect answer because, of course, the women have, you know, beat New Zealand, you know, before the men did. So, again, that's going back in the email. But it is just, I suppose, that importance that when you're not, you know, when you're not identifying the gender and letting people know who you're talking about, you know, there's that kind of undertone sometimes that the men's team is more significant. And I know we see that, you know, in football as well. And it is to ensure that female athletes are given the recognition that they deserve and the credit that they deserve. Obviously, a huge moment in rugby when that women's team, the Irish women's team, did beat New Zealand. Eve, you're currently in preparation for the upcoming Olympics. A journey to get to that stage. Is self-belief something that comes naturally to you, or do you think that that's something that you've had to work on?
I think a bit of both, to be honest with you. But even just on the topic of the Olympics, I suppose, like, it was kind of shocking to me. I was part of a panelist for International Women's Day the other day, and I was looking up actually some facts on the class of boat that I sail. And I suppose a recent change that has occurred for the class to be more inclusive of women was that there was no viable option for the women to compete in the class of boat that I sail at the Olympics until 2008. Which was crazy for me to even read because, you know, sailing, I was only 4 years old in 2008, but sailing that class of boat has been my entire life. So it's amazing to see, you know, how far we've come in such a short amount of time already. And it's nice to see that we're kind of keeping on the momentum and listening to all the other girls' stories about it. So, yeah, but anyways, that was just a bit of a side. Self-belief and self-confidence for me, I think it's come quite naturally because I've grown up with two older brothers who have been very supportive of me. And obviously, I have a great support team around me who have helped. And I suppose I'm just a very competitive athlete. And I've just always grown up to shout if there's something that's unfair or if I see something that's, you know, unequal or biased. It definitely, it comes with its highs and lows. And as my confidence goes up and down, which I'm sure all the girls have experienced in sport. But yeah, no, it's definitely a great skill to have in sport.
And I suppose on that topic, how do we encourage women to have that belief and to just go for it in different opportunities? You know, we mentioned earlier on about, you know, the job criteria or promotions and that sometimes women don't put their hands up and men might be more likely to. So you mentioned that it actually goes up and down as well. I suppose, how do you bring it back up if it does go down?
Yeah, 100%. Like there's so many challenges in sport and business. And like Hannah was saying, you know, the worst thing that can happen is they can say no in business. And I suppose it's just rolling with the punches and not giving up with the first hurdle. I think that's so important. And I think just going back to what we were talking about earlier with the being such a high dropout rate of young women in sport, I think that a lot of us, you know, we drop out when the first challenge comes. And I think it's just, you know, being resilient, like Chloe was saying, was such a huge skill. So I think in terms of, you know, keeping the confidence up, it is quite difficult. But yeah, we just have to kind of stick together and roll with the punches and fight through it.
And I suppose for, you know, anybody that might be parents or future parents or aunts and uncles maybe that are listening to us, it is about encouraging girls as much as you would boys. And you know, if there's a little bit of, oh, I don't feel like going today or I don't want to go to training, that you are, you know, trying to have that, you know, equal attitude in encouraging people out the door to go to that training session and building that in people. It can be, I suppose, I'm sure there's plenty of whining coming from boys and girls sometimes when they don't want to go. But just trying to support and considering, I suppose, what we've talked about, like all of those skills that you are developing and, you know, that is that resilience and, you know, keep showing up and that discipline that you're just continuing to build those skills that will stand to you in the future, whether that's in your personal life or whether that is in your professional career as well. Alice, I'd love to hear any advice that you'd give to women that are interested in working in sport.
Yeah, I think for me, I guess sometimes you feel like in sport, how do I get into it? It can be difficult to get involved. I guess where I kind of got my first taste was when I was involved first when I was a student at UCD. I became quite involved in the kind of management committee side of things with UCD Women's Rugby and helping grow the club. We kind of went from when I was finishing up playing 12 or 15 girls, and within a year we doubled it, and then 3 years later, we tripled it, and it's just grown ever since. And that's kind of 10 years ago now. So I think if you kind of want to get into sport, it's great to obviously play and have that experience. And if you don't have to play at the highest level, it's about having an interest. And that interest can also go into coaching or refereeing, but also to the organization and committee side of things. And that volunteering is hugely important. And you can get some fantastic experiences from there that you can bring into work. And it's hugely impactful in terms of kind of, I guess, giving you those experiences and stories that you can pull on. I guess if you are in an interview scenario, that can make you stand out. So I guess I would encourage people to get involved in your local club or team. And if you can do so, give more time than just the playing, which I know is a lot to ask sometimes, but it's hugely rewarding. It's a fantastic experience, and it's a great way to actually meet more people, to build a bit of a network. And through that, you can start to tell your story of how you're interested in sport and you want to get involved and how do I work in it. So I would just encourage people to do that bit of extra volunteering, and then to just ask, you know, there's no harm if there's people, you know, or even sending an email and looking for an opportunity, be it an internship or some work experience. If, as the girls have said, if you don't ask, you don't get. So it's, I know that can be difficult, and I know I've struggled with that at times and having the confidence to make that step. But, you know, if you don't hear back from me, you get a no, it's not the end of the world, and you just ask the next person.
Absolutely. I think what you've mentioned there, actually, in the, you know, getting involved at committee level in college, you know, is actually something that will stand to you. As you mentioned, you can kind of try things out, see how you enjoy it. And you know, that might give you that spark of interest in potentially pursuing, you know, working in the sports industry. But I think it absolutely stands to you in any capacity. Obviously, we're talking a little bit here about developing skills in terms of, you know, being on the pitch or in the boat or, you know, on the track, whatever it might be, like you're developing all of those skills. But as well, in those committee positions or in coaching positions, refereeing, like you're gaining so much from that as well. I was on, yeah, two committees in UCD for two different sports, but you learn something all the time, and it is applying those skills, like, you know, how to work as part of a team, how to communicate, how to lead, whether it's on the pitch, on the water, on a team. Not everybody's going to agree all the time as well, and it is, how do you compromise and communicate to, again, work towards that, towards that common goal. Chloe, I'd like to finish off with some words of advice for girls, women, anyone who might be maybe daunted to go for a promotion, for a career change, or to put their hand up for an opportunity. What words of advice would you have for them?
Well, just going back to what we were discussing there about, you know, how so many females drop out of sport or don't go for the next opportunity, as we're talking about. I almost think if you just show up, how bad can it go? You can just get a no, as we've discussed. But for me, it's always about just showing up, putting your hand up, asking what else might be on offer if you do get a no. So for me, it's just about showing up and being present. And you might just get that next step, or you might enjoy the experience, which may get you to come back the next day. So for me, it's just about, yeah, being there and putting your hand up, and you never know what might come.
I think that's really good. Hannah, we'll come to you and see if you can follow Chloe's response.
To be honest, I'm probably just going to reiterate it. You know, some days showing up is all you have to do. And on what Alice was saying around, you know, sometimes sending that email or sending that message, that might be like kind of like a cold call to someone that you might not be particularly close with in work or in sport. It's definitely something that I've really tried to push myself to do, you know, in a company where I'm only working 3 days a week. I don't have a huge opportunity to meet new people, and I sit on a trading floor with you know, a lot of males and a few females, and you know, I've realized that you only ever have to need the confidence to hit send on an email. You know, you can write it and not send it, and it's always there. But when I came back from Paris qualifiers, and unfortunately we hadn't qualified, you know, my usual brain was like into the process mode and like writing, and have to realign all my goals for the year, and I have a lot more time for work and things, and sent an email to a lady that sits on my floor who I knew was going on a trip to London the following week to meet clients. And I literally put in bold in the subject line, like, you can say no to this. I'm just completely putting myself out there. if I could join you for the 2 days and just tag along. And she was more than delighted to have me. I've been away with her on 2 or 3 other trips. It's completely changed my speed of learning in my job, and it's also allowed me to kind of find a mentor in an area very close to me. So it doesn't always work out like that. You know, I've reached out and haven't heard back from other people, but it's kind of, you know, the law of averages that eventually someone will be very happy to give you their time. You just have to kind of keep pushing yourself to find that person. But it can be very uncomfortable. It's not an easy thing. But the more you can kind of push yourself out of your comfort zone, the more success that you might have. Once, of course, you're okay to take the no.
Yeah, and look, that's the thing, you know, if you don't ask, you don't get. And what you've also talked there a little bit about is like that adaptability. Like sometimes things don't always work out the way that you had hoped or the way that you maybe expected. But it is, you know, bouncing back and trying something again or trying something new or asking for that opportunity to go for it as well. But look, thanks so much to everybody for your time. I think some really interesting advice and conversation there. I'm sure we could go on for much, much longer. But I think we'll call it at that stage and appreciate all your time and contributions to the conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Well, that brings us to the end of our podcast today. I'd like to thank all of our panelists for joining us. We're going to wish you the best of luck and look forward to celebrating your continued success in the future. As mentioned, we were joined by Alice O'Callaghan, Development and Events Manager at Six Nations, footballer Chloe Mustaki, sailor Eve McMahon, and hockey player Hannah McLaughlin. I'd encourage you to follow their journeys online, connecting on LinkedIn, Instagram, or other social platforms. I'd also like to offer a special thank you to Maeve Houlihan, Director of UCD Quinn School, for bringing this remarkable group together on International Women's Day. We'd also like to thank the extended production team for this episode of Valerie Abbott, Beth Wormley, Peter Keneally, Mike Liffey, Paul Reynolds, and Orla Wren. They have worked tirelessly in the background, taking care of everything from scheduling, recording, sound editing, promoting, and everything in between. Until next time.